safety tips for avoiding deer collisions. On roads bordering fields or natural habitat, always watch for wildlife, especially at dawn and dusk. Continually look from road to roadside, checking for movement. Reduce speed in areas where deer are most likely to cross the road. If you see one deer, expect more to follow. And if a deer freezes in your headlights, turn them off and then back on again. For more tips and information about living with wildlife, call the Animal Protection Institute at 1-800-348-7387 or visit api4animals.org. Give deer a break. Drive safe. The Animal Protection Institute offers easy safety tips for avoiding deer collisions. On roads bordering fields or natural habitat, always watch for wildlife, especially at dawn and dusk. Continually look from road to roadside, checking for movement. Reduce speed in areas where deer are most likely to cross the road. If you see one deer, expect more to follow. And if a deer freezes in your headlights, turn them off and then back on again. For more tips and information about living with wildlife, call the Animal Protection Institute at 1-800-348-7387 or visit api4animals.org. Give deer a break. Drive safe.
All right. You're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. A note there. That was my fault. I hit the wrong switch and rebooted the computer. I'm sorry for those of you listening to Democracy Now! What we're going to do, for those of you outraged listeners out there right now, we're going to find the program and play that last minute so that you don't charge us with riot gear and all that. We're going to find it. We'll play it sometime within the next 10 minutes or so. So just be patient. It's 12:02. No, that's not right. The time says it's 12:02. Okay, this is our last day here. I think it's somewhere around 6 o'clock, and that means it's time for Off the Wall.
give me a great deal of hope. I think that part of this story, underreported, as you mentioned, is that we are seeing the beginning of the biggest outpouring of citizen activism that we've seen since the Vietnam War. And we have to translate it into action.
And I'll just push this one last question around the Secretary of State, because this is truly unprecedented. The choice of Rex Tillerson and your thoughts on the head of ExxonMobil, just resigned a few weeks ago, to become the Secretary of State of the United States.
Yeah. ExxonMobil has financed climate denial. And every year they say they have stopped. And then when the funding reports come out at the end of the year, we find that they have continued. I think what ExxonMobil has done is deeply unethical. I think that in a world where other choices would be possible, we would have a different person selected for Secretary of State.
Vice President Al Gore, I was interviewing him here at a panel at the film festival on Sunday. I also asked him about the Dakota Access Pipeline, as Standing Rock Sioux Chair Dave Archambault was in the audience.
I've spoken out many times in support of Chairman Archambault and the Standing Rock Sioux tribal movement. I've publicly labeled it an atrocity. And I do think that, as Heather said, this is a moment that is filled with possibilities for raising awareness. And the short story is I am against it.
That was Al Gore speaking Sunday here at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. Well, on Monday, water protectors walked down Main Street and linked arms to block the entrance to a Chase Bank lounge in order to protest the connection of one of the festival's leading sponsors to investment in the Dakota Access Pipeline. They were joined by actor and activist Shailene Woodley and two filmmakers whose Viceland series Rise about Indigenous resistance is playing at the film festival. That does it for our show. If you want to...
Here at Off the Wall, we keep our promises. We may screw things up occasionally, but we do keep our promises. And those were the missing 3 minutes of Democracy Now! That was my fault for cutting off. Kyle, what do you think of the new theme that we're playing right now?
It's grand.
I like it. I think it's a good way to usher in this new era. And I feel inspired by it. I feel like doing something. Kicking a little ass. Well, maybe not by the time it ends. I'm kind of reclining at this point. But at the beginning, I think it charges you up. It really does.
It's got good rhythm.
Yeah. And thank you. Thank you to all the listeners who wrote in with suggestions and ideas. There was one. I wanted to read this one letter because it really was incredible. We got more letters on this, I think, than anything we've talked about in a long time, which is, that says a lot, that the theme is the most riveting subject matter that we have. Dear Emmanuel and Kyle, I just listened to your episode from January 17th where you played the old off the wall themes. What a treat. I started listening to your shows back in 2004 when I downloaded my first podcast, and I know you hate that word, and I saw 2600 listed in the recommended shows. I've been listening ever since. You even sent a bunch of Get Well stickers for Jim after on Off the Hook after he suffered his stroke. In fact, I remember those Get Well stickers.
Yeah,
there's one stuck to the wall in the office.
I adhered one to some things in the office.
Most amazingly, though, was how quickly that music transported me back to the moment of my first listen. I could picture the room where I was perfectly, and for a moment, I even felt like the person back then. Each new theme brought back different memories, and as much as I like the current one, I'm looking forward to tying a whole new set of memories to the new one, whatever it may be. Onwards. Signed, Mark. Mark, thank you so much for that amazing letter. And yes, you know, you nailed it, because music does that. It sends you back. You can feel the same sensations and emotions as when you heard something for the first time, or if you haven't heard something for a long time, it just transports you back magically.
Absolutely. It conjures up those feelings and whatever was going on, maybe just transports you and is a time capsule of memories and whatever you associate with that sound.
I think everyone has a song or a piece of music that does something for them. I have a few, but I'd have to say, if I was thinking of the very, very first memory that I ever had, the very first bit of music, the song Downtown by Petula Clark does it every time. I try not to listen to it too much, because if you listen to it too much, it ruins it. But whenever I hear that song, I'm just transported to being a toddler, because that song must have been playing at that time. And I remember being in New York City outside, being taken someplace. And it's a magical feeling being able to do that. And I think everybody has their special piece of music that has that kind of connection.
Yeah, I can't think of any in particular. I can think of tunes occasionally. They sort of creep up and become an earworm of sorts. But I always, I know a song that does that for me when I hear it, definitely.
Yeah, it does. It does have that effect. Again, thank you to everybody who wrote in with suggestions. Hopefully you like the theme. We're stuck with it for the next 4 years, or until Donald Trump is removed from office one way or another. that's just the way things work. Okay, so I don't know how I'm going to do a show with the time saying it's 12:13. Why does it say that? I guess I have to get my phone out and look at the clock there, because the computer clock is wrong as well. You know, it took forever to get that Democracy Now! To load up, because this is a very old Mac. If you folks have any new Macs out there, please let us know, because the Chrome icon was bouncing for a good 3 minutes there before it even loaded, and then it turned out it couldn't do what we wanted to do anyway. This is an historic show, or is it a historic show? An historic or a historic?
You could say both. I don't
know. This language, really. Well, whatever it is, it's history in the making, because this is the last. You know what? I could hit the console as hard as I can, because it doesn't matter anymore. This is the... Well, I guess it matters to the people coming in for the next couple of days, but it's the last show we are doing from this room for sure. Definitely no questions asked about it.
Game over.
Game
this
over.
This is it.
Uh-huh.
This is... And we're not going to just... We're not going to sit here and be misty about it. We're excited to... Now, we can be a little misty.
Well, I remember a show where I was misty, and boy, that brings back memories, because...
Wistful?
Back when I was sentimental, I was a different person. No, I believed in things. I believed in the ability of people to change, for people to become better. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was sentimental then, you know, and I'm not like that anymore. I wish I were. You know, those were good days, but no.
Yes, that sheen of callous... And
you see that, right?
Yeah, I
wear that proudly. I wear that sheen of callousness. That identifies who I am.
Yeah, it's like a biker jacket.
Yeah, no, but seriously, this is it. Next week we will be in the new facility. The cutover day, in case you haven't heard it, is this Friday. I think
that was announced.
3 p.m. That is when well, we're going to throw a switch. I don't know if the switch will do anything. Well, the switch I threw just now did something, that's for damn sure.
It will be a proverbial switch.
Yeah, someone else will throw the switch that knows what they're doing, and magically will be transported to the other side of campus, which normally takes a few hours to get to, but we'll have people over there already, and we'll be broadcasting from there, and then we're going to take an axe to this place. And well, I don't know what's going to happen. Actually, we do have to preserve some things. For instance,
we're going to load up a mule with the board.
This board here. Now, if you've ever been in a radio station, perhaps you don't know what we mean when we say board. A board is basically a big mixing console, except this is a board like nothing you've ever really probably seen before, unless you've gone to some old radio stations. You know what? I'm going to take a picture of this board as it is right now, and I'm going to tweet it later. How about that? If you want to see what it looks like, follow me on Twitter. It's Eman Goldstein. There wasn't enough room for the UEL, so it's Eman Goldstein. And I will tweet the picture of the board, the console, on its last day for our show. We have still have 2.5 more days to go. And then you can see what it actually looks like, what we have worked with for so many years, what I've worked with for a huge number of years. First time I sat behind this console was 1977. If you can believe that.
What? Wow.
Yeah, and the same damn board was here then, but you know, it worked a lot better. It you know, things tend to break down after a period of time, but the period of time this thing has lasted is simply incredible.
Would you be able to say that it had the new board smell?
Well, I don't know about a smell, but you know, I'll tell you, speaking of smells, people smoked back then. People would smoke in the, I don't know if they smoked in the station itself. I think in the reception area, people were allowed to smoke, and then it was out in the hallway. That's where people smoked. Then it was outside the building. Now it has to be off campus, and pretty soon it won't be on the planet anymore. So that's how things change.
So there were like ashtrays and stuff.
It had to. I hope there were ashtrays.
All sorts of...
I just remember that was something that happened, and it happened everywhere. Trains, there was a smoking car, smoking sections of restaurants. The other radio station that we work at, they smoked everywhere. They smoked while they were doing shows. It was kind of disgusting, but not anymore.
Times change. No, that is a good change. I remember some places like diners and stuff having those indoor air circulators that would be like totally... discolored from the smoke, and you know, I remember some of those in my upbringing.
Yeah, and imagine the inside of your lungs. You know, that's they're exposed to the same thing.
Yeah, and it's all like synthesized and nasty. And
what do you think?
Full of chemicals.
In say another 40 years or so. And by the way, this is our 40th anniversary this year, coming up in June of this radio station. What do you think in another 40 years people will look back on our period of time and say, wow, that was disgusting, and I'm glad we don't do that anymore?
Internal combustion engines. Absolutely. Hands down.
Okay.
Unless it's running really absolutely awesome, super scientific biofuels, we will look at it as disgusting. The just the discussions we've had about emissions and the scandal with Volkswagen is a great example. We've talked about that a lot. But just in general, when you walk outside, kind of in the same way we looked at leaded gasoline, I think we'll look at that fuel as something that was never really accommodated for as far as remediation. And I'm talking about like exhaust and emissions quality. And just the cognitive dissonance about cheap fuel and the abundance of it in our ground level atmosphere, just that we breathe all the time. I think that'll be something we see as completely out of control and something we didn't manage well, and that, you know, it becomes normal for us to just, you know, have our oncologist and I've gotten this mystery cancer today and that ailment tomorrow. And we don't actually hold the manufacturers and the fuel companies accountable. We are just satisfied with cheap fuel prices, and we rationalize it with telling ourselves that everything would be crippled if we didn't come up with better solutions. And I think our health will be something that suffers or that we trade as a result.
So I was just taking pictures of the board, as I promised, because otherwise I'd forget. I think you're right. I think that is what people will look back on as being disgusting and something they no longer do in 40 years, if we survive that long and if the whole planet doesn't go up in smoke before then. And we took a bigger step in that direction, I think, towards going up in smoke, that is, over the last week. Well, you know, here we are. It's been how many days now? 1, 2, 3, 4 days under President Trump. And what a circus it's been so far. I mean, I couldn't have hoped for more of a carnival atmosphere than what I've seen so far. Basically doing battle with the media, executive orders that really make you quiver with anger, and just an overall feeling of, wow, this guy is in way over his head, and what have we done? What are we in for? But I have to say I'm optimistic because the reaction, that's always what we've been focused on since this nightmare first started. The reaction is how we're going to gauge where we go from here. And the reaction we saw the day after the inauguration, as you may have heard in the news, was orders of magnitude larger than what Donald Trump was hoping to see at his coronation ceremony. And that annoyed the hell out of him. But it also inspired the hell out of us because we saw that there are so many of us and so many good people, so many good ideas, so much power. And it's only the beginning. It's only the beginning. And I think in some bizarre, strange way, the election of Donald Trump may have been the best thing to have happened to the people that don't like Donald Trump.
Yeah. I would add to that that the previous administration and the run-up with politics in general, having transitioned into now being, I guess, activated and participating as citizens, is the preparedness. I think a lot of people were already talking about all these issues, either from the campaign or from the previous administration's work. Maybe you didn't like where they stood on an issue. Maybe you did, man. It was laudable. But I think we're really engaged and really aware. Like, when you talk about TPP, people know about it. When you talk about a lot of these particular like pipelines and interests or other social issues, abortion,
did you say
women's rights?
Did you say pipeline?
Oh, yeah. I mentioned.
I believe there is some news concerning a particular pipeline. Well, you mentioned it. And yes, we are keyed into these things right now.
It's oddly something that it's not a mysterious topic. We were talking about it, and a lot of people are aware of it. And it was something that had a lot of attention drawn to it because of the protesters there.
Standing Rock in North Dakota. We talked to some people there on our other radio show a couple of months ago. And we celebrated a victory because the permits were denied. But we knew with President Trump coming down the road, that it was entirely possible things might change. Well, today they did. Not surprisingly, today he signed an executive order allowing the project to go through or paving the way, almost literally, for the project to proceed. And I got to say, wow, okay, that didn't take long. What now? What do you think?
Indeed. What do I think? I think initially... we were going into the weekend. There was I wanted to check up on this topic. I had a sneaking suspicion, and boy, wow! Once the week got started, I'm glad I did check up on this. There wasn't very much as far as update. I was getting more information about the camp moving people, mm-hmm. And maybe some old stories about the law that was passed about blocking roadways.
Oh, what we talked about last week.
Yes, and a lot of framing of that. And new framing with the new public relations and new administration philosophy around it.
For those who don't know, that legislation basically makes it less of a crime to run somebody over if they're blocking a road. If you did it by accident, in other words, you didn't target them directly in North Dakota, you can walk away from it. So if they're blocking the road, they're demonstrators, and you, quote-unquote, accidentally run them over, it's okay, not a big deal. That is the kind of person we're dealing with here.
Right. So I have the statement from the chief of the tribe, and I'll read that in a second.
Can I read Trump's statement first so that you'll be more emotional when you read that statement back?
Sure.
All right. And then I'd like to get... You had something before that.
No, go ahead.
Okay. This is what Trump said today when he signed his executive order. From now on... Pay attention, Kyle. This is important. The president's speaking.
I am.
All right. From now on, we are going to start making pipelines in the United States.
Yeah, he was talking about the metal workers.
You know, there's plenty of things metal workers can make. It doesn't have to be something horrible that pollutes the environment. Okay. That's what he said. So, Chief, you got something?
Yes. He said, President Trump is legally required to honor our treaty rights and provide a fair and reasonable pipeline process. He went on to say, Americans know this pipeline was unfairly rerouted towards our nation and without our consent. The existing pipeline route risks infringing on our treaty rights, contaminating our water, and the water of 17 million Americans downstream. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers rejected Dakota Access Pipeline's request for an easement late last year, finding that the agency had failed to fully consider the impacts of the pipeline on the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. The Department of the Army pledged to conduct a full environmental review of the Missouri River crossing and evaluate alternative sites, which would not put the tribe at risk of an oil spill. However, that environmental review would be circumvented under today's executive order, allowing the project to immediately resume construction. Trump's press secretary said on Monday that Trump intended to approve the easement with an aim towards job creation, and I was speaking to that a little bit, but tribal leaders note the bulk of pipeline jobs are in pipeline construction. The pipeline only creates a total of 15 permanent jobs in North Dakota.
15 is a high number. That's, you know, it's a good number. You can't get 15 people in this room. It's a lot of jobs.
A reroute would protect the tribe's water and create hundreds of jobs. Standing Rock said, it's not a matter of if, but when DAPL will leak. Sunoco, one of the American companies operating DAPL, has a poor record on pipeline safety and spill prevention. Data from the pipeline and hazardous...
Excuse me, a poor record means you can only go up.
These sound like alternative facts.
I'm trying to look at things through the new eyes of the world we live in.
Data from the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration show operators have reported about 200 crude oil spills per year on average.
That's less than one a day.
More than 176,000 gallons of oil spilled in western North Dakota last month
alone.
Less
than 200,000.
Trump's decision appears to be political payback. By granting the easement, Trump is risking our treaty rights and water supply to benefit his wealthy contributors and friends of DAPL. We are not opposed to energy independence. We are opposed to reckless and politically motivated development projects like DAPL that ignore our treaty rights and risk our water. Creating a second Flint does not make America great again.
Today's news is a breath of fresh air and proof that President Trump won't let radical special interest groups stand in the way of doing what's best for American workers. That actually was said by somebody. It was said by Senator John Comyn of Texas, a second-ranking Republican in the Senate. You know, folks, it's not just Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the clown. He's the one we laugh at. He's the one we point our fingers at and say, wow, this guy has no idea what he's doing. But there are so many people who do know what they're doing underneath him that he's appointing. And those are the people to really be afraid of. Those are the people to watch out for. They're not as spectacular in the limelight, but they're getting the job done. And we cannot afford to let them sneak under the radar.
So, do you want to know who else knows or thinks they know what they're doing surrounding this North Dakota pipeline?
I also want to know, okay, what do we do now? And I'm sure we'll find out. This just happened today, so there hasn't been much time for a reaction. But I hope that the reaction is strong. I hope that we're going to be watching APTN later. And yeah. For those of you who don't get APTN, you can. You can go to APTN.ca. It's a Canadian television network, Aboriginal People's Television Network is what it's called. Imagine if in our country, United States of America, we had a television network that every cable system carried that was run by Native Americans, that had their own news gathering force, had all kinds of programs. Well, they have that in Canada. It's one of the positive things that they have. And they do some really good investigative reporting, and they are the only major news organization, and yes, they are a major news organization, to be on site at Standing Rock providing nightly reports. So that's a good place to get news and information, and I'm sure they'll have an update tonight.
Indeed, yeah. One of the things that is also going on there that people observed in the last week is the North Dakota Army National Guard has gone so far as to deploy two Avenger missile system launchers.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Okay, I know we're living in Crazyville. I know that, you know, everything that I believe is wrong now and that I should expect gravity to stop working, but they are bringing out missile launchers for demonstrators? How exactly is this going to work?
Yes, that's right, folks.
We're not spacemen. We're not up there in the sky. What are they planning?
Two surface-to-air missile launchers are sitting on a hill, and while the missile tubes may not be loaded, they're threatening just the same. The Avengers first came to light on January 16th when pictures were taken at a drill pad site and subsequently posted on Facebook. The Daily Beast reported on this. It is a photograph on Facebook, I guess, and the caption was anti-drone missile system confirmed on top of hill guarding the DAPL drill pad. A guard spokesperson said, these systems have observation capabilities and are used strictly in the observation role to protect private property and public safety.
So I guess this is in case the tribe's Air Force decides to bomb the pipeline. Is that what they're worried about?
It is unclear. This is a story that came out today. A couple of different people are reporting on this. This is from Digital Journal, and I just read a couple of the lines from this article. But basically, yeah, these launch systems have radar, I assume, and are part of sort of network combat control systems and so on. So they can work with maybe aerial vehicles, satellite capabilities. They can also be like incorporated and linked into the sort of management of all of that. Thus, I guess the DoD and the administration can be a part of that, be able to see things. But what these systems are used for is these surface-to-air missiles, which would be used in a battlefield scenario. What they've done is basically removed the artillery or the munitions, and they're placing them in kind of a menacing way near this drill pad on behalf of these corporations.
Wow.
Well, so they've gone from dogs to now missile launchers. They're basically a Humvee with a flatbed in the back and two big... they look like fireworks launchers, those ones with all the holes.
Yes, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, six or four on each side, and you can move it around and launch, presumably. So that's the kind of hardware that they've moved into place there. It's still not clear if people are moving. I know last time we talked to people there, it was winter time and so on. It still is, obviously. They're wanting most people to leave. I think a couple people are going to stay there, but what I was hearing over the weekend is that three camps in some agreement that was part of the easement and the legal process they were going through last week was that they were going to tear down some of these sites. So it's really getting conflicting news.
Well, I don't think they're going to tear down the sites now.
I think certain people are going to stay at those sites. It remains to be seen, but you definitely have, I think, still some of the vets that are there and people who have dug in. And
trust me, Kyle, after seeing what I saw on Saturday, the kind of mobilization we have never seen in this country before, the biggest demonstrations in our history, and that counts Vietnam.
Yeah.
I don't think this is going to be taken without much of a comment. This is going to be reacted to quite strongly. Right now, though, it's extremely cold in North Dakota. We talked to people there, and they were advising people not to stay there during the winter because you will die.
That's right.
It's really harsh.
That's right.
And not much is going to happen at that point. But believe me, it's not going to last forever. And people are not going to take this lying down. It's the gauntlet has been thrown. And you're going to see a reaction, absolutely, and we'll certainly give updates on that and talk to people out there.
Yeah, and we need the whole story. We need to talk to more people out there and get a sense of where they are in their agreements and if they're satisfied in the impact from the environmental impact study. But a lot of the stuff about coming from the administration was about speeding things up because of, as we indicated in the story, jobs. And under the guise of negotiating these deals to the benefit of American industry, but it still kind of negates or the fast tracking of those environmental assessments puts in jeopardy an actual like decent assessment of the impact, and that's what the tribe is asking for, and that's what you heard in the chief's response today. Basically, they're entitled to a reasonable pipeline process. And this fast tracking for American jobs is one thing. It's nice. There's a lot of things we'd like to fast track, but Is that reasonable? And I think that's a question going forward. There's also, I just wanted to mention Spectra Energy, the Atlantic Bridge pipeline. There's another whole other pipeline. I'm not going to get into it, but there's only 900 signatures required. This is change.org. There's they need 10,000 to send a letter to Governor Cuomo about that pipeline. It comes within 100 feet of Indian Point Nuclear power plant.
What kind of pipeline is this?
This is a gas pipeline. It's about 42 inches in diameter.
Hold on. I really need to come with drinks to this show now, because you tell me these things that just shock me. All right, so you're saying that a natural gas pipeline.
42-inch fracked gas pipeline.
Okay, these are the kind that occasionally explode.
It's going to go under the Hudson River.
All right, but it's going to come within how many feet of Indian Point Nuclear Reactor?
105.
105 feet.
Yes.
They just tacked the 5 on to make it extra safe. Why? Yeah, we live in a big country. Why would you make something come, 100 feet, I could probably throw a ball that far.
Yeah, it's disturbing.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. I mean, these explosions with this kind of stuff on trains are
what's wrong with these
really
people?
Devastating.
Are they,
this is the kind of stuff
in the head or something.
This is the kind of it's crazy. They get easements. They want eminent domain on behalf of
easements,
the government.
On common sense is what
all
they
this,
have
exactly. And these are the things that like wipe out whole towns when a train derails. So they want to put it in a pipe, and they want to run that pipe right next to a power plant.
What's the website for people to sign that petition?
Okay, you can go to change.org, and it is Stop Spectra Pipeline, or SAPE2016.org is another site.
That's not Standing Rock. It's a different one. It's one that comes through New York. So
Stop Spectra Energy, Atlantic Bridge Pipeline. That is from a listener that I think heard us on Off the Hook talking about pipelines, and I looked into that, and that is, very close. I have more stuff about
We don't have time for petitions. Pipelines. There's too many pipelines.
The petition site, I'll save that for another time. Really funny stuff going on with the petition.gov site. But anyway, you've got some stories.
Oh, you mean the petition for
the taxes. Yeah, it
tax
doubled.
Returns.
It's like over 100,000. It's 200,000. There's also one in there on hemp that's kind of related to fuel and stuff. So I was going to tie that into a couple things. But basically, a hemp petition is on there as well, because it got wiped, and then people started adding petitions immediately, one being the taxes, one for impeachment, and also one on hemp, which is kind of funny.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
it's like 5 left.
All of these things are important, but we have to prioritize and focus on the most important things. Tax return, I think, is way up there.
And that doubled. That was 150,000 signatures over the weekend.
According to the website, I don't know why that's even still up, because I figured Trump would just take that down immediately.
Well, they wiped a couple things. That's what
They reset it. But it's still there, and you need 100,000 to get a White House response.
Yeah,
and they got that within a day. They have like 30 more days to reach 100,000, but they're already at 250,000.
They're actually no, they're at 196,000 out of 100,000. Last I checked, that was this afternoon, so it is going up. There's another one, divest or put in a blind trust all president's business and financial assets. That has 92,000. Let American farmers grow. I already talked about that. Resign as president of the United States in violation of the emulates. Release your tax returns. That has 15,000 out of 100,000. So there's a couple new ones. The hemp one's at 15 out of 100,000.
The one that he has to respond to, or by those rules, which of course he'll just make up his own rules anyway. That is well over what the requirement is. But so many disturbing things have happened to the WhiteHouse.gov site. References to climate change have been removed.
Yeah.
LGBTQ rights gone. I think I even heard that Spanish language has been removed from the WhiteHouse.gov website. These are dark days.
Or sanitized.
It's everything we feared and more.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not just Chicken Little here. This is really happening. The question now is, what do we do about it? Us snowflakes, they call us. Well, you know what?
Our piece. We've been talking.
We said our piece, but what do you get with a billion snowflakes? You're going to get an avalanche, perhaps. And I think that's what these people are going to experience.
It's a blizzard.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be a whiteout. Really? Okay, there's all kinds of analogies, all kinds of metaphors we can throw at you. But I'm thinking in particular of the neo-Nazi in D.C., you know, because these neo-Nazis are coming out.
I like this, actually.
They're coming out of the woodwork now, and you have to ask yourself, why is that? Because they feel emboldened, because they feel like their time is now. And they're not getting shut down by this administration. In fact, they have people from Breitbart, people who represent the alt-right in the administration, setting policy, advising the president. This is real, folks. This is actually happening. And there was this one jerk who was out there as a neo-Nazi. In fact, we had seen video of him doing the Heil Hitler. It's not open to interpretation. This guy is a neo-Nazi. There's no question about it. And you see this protest. This was on Inauguration Day. Just run up to him and slug him in the face. And you know, when that happened, first of all, we were hearing about all kinds of demonstrators who were turning over trash cans. And you know, people were so upset about the trash cans being turned over. But you know, when I heard about that, there was the part of me.
Or the limo.
That limo, too, was set on fire. Yeah, all kinds of property damage. But when I heard about the neo-Nazi being slugged in the face, the annoying part of me said to myself, I have internal battles all the time, said, you know, Emmanuel, violence is wrong. If you disagree with people, you should be able to talk it out, you know, have a dialogue, act like civilized people. But it's never acceptable to run up to somebody and just smack them in the face. And, you know, I usually listen to that part of me, but this time I said, you know, conscious, no, this is wrong. Okay, if this was a movie, all right, if this was a movie and there was a Nazi character in it, and somebody slugged him in the face, everybody in the audience would cheer. And I'd be cheering too, because these people are scumbags and they deserve to be smacked in the face. They preach genocide. They preach racial hatred. They are awful people. We cannot tolerate them. And I was kind of surprised to hear myself say this to myself, because it kind of flies in the face of what I normally believe in. But I think there are lines that get crossed. And this line has been crossed. So, yeah, if you see a neo-Nazi, I think it's perfectly okay to smack him in the face, because these are violent, horrible people that deserve it. And sometimes that is called for. And I think we're at that time right now.
One or two interesting things from that, just really quickly, I noticed he's pointing to a pin that he's wearing before he gets hit. And it was the Pepe the Frog pin. That is a, it's like a little green frog head. Mm-hmm. It's a sign of the alt-right movement, but it is actually a hate symbol. I looked up, and it was recently added to the Anti-Defamation League site in their comprehensive list. It's tough that we have so many hate symbols, but that is a hate symbol. It's not just a meme. So he was pointing to that and sort of hypocritically or ironically saying, no, I'm not a you know, I'm not this, I'm not a Nazi. But, you know, and then the person said, well, what's that on your, you know, what is that? And that's when the person ran up. The other thing about...
That's good timing.
Yeah, it was really apropos, a good response or a good... It's kind of like that joke when you say, hey, you got something on your shirt. You know, and then you hit him in the nose. Yeah, well, it's a little bit of a...
I fall for that every time.
Yeah, it was a combined effort or cooperative version of that.
Wait, are you saying the person that made him point to his pin was in on it?
I don't know. It's hard to say. She's talking to him. Maybe she was the Australian reporter. He was talking to Australian TV, and maybe she came up, started questioning, and someone she was with. I don't want to say that, though. That's speculative. But the interesting thing about the person that did hit him is that they were a black bloc person. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really realize this. I've heard black bloc stuff in recent stuff. They were big in WTO. It's actually a German technique. It's a protest technique. It's not a group, which I think is really cool. It's the tactical version, I think, of Anonymous, where basically you just wear black and you are anonymous. And what that is a response, and it's a response not from an individual but a perspective that is there active, resisting and demonstrating. So Black Bloc appears at events, and stuff like this does happen. And, you know, people, I think, they call it anarchy and this and that and the other thing. But really, it's just a way of expressing ourselves without any one person then being the subject of reprisal from any kind of regime.
I don't usually agree with their tactics, but I almost always agree with their point of view. And in this particular case, I did agree with their tactics.
It works. It works in certain scenarios. And for all that has been said, I mean, and done in the name of what we're now experiencing, I think this is on par with, you know, a friendly reminder that if you're not going to go unchecked, you can't just say things that are hateful and then think that you're going to be protected, or think that you're going to be able to call it protected speech.
And let's be clear as to what is hateful and what is not. You know, an opinion, of course, is an opinion. And that's not at all what we're talking about. So let's stop claiming that. Oh my God, you're oppressing us and preventing us from speaking freely.
Yeah, that's not a political perspective that we honor.
Not at all. Not at all. The kinds of things that these people say and advocate and inspire are dreadful, horrible things that will bring down our society and create all kinds of horrible. Horrible things. I mean, there's just no other way around that. We've seen it throughout history. We see it in other parts of the world, and we will see it here too if we do not fight back.
Yeah, I heard a great analogy, or it kind of put it in perspective, but some of our parents and grandparents fought against the Nazis. Like, this was a worldwide thing that we agreed was not okay.
I saw something on Twitter that was just great before, where someone's 93-year-old grandmother said, you know, if you had told me that it was going to be Nazis were going to get beaten up in D.C., I would have gone. I just think that's priceless.
Still hadn't got it out of her system, huh?
But think about what happened this weekend. Think about all the people that showed up. Here in Port Jefferson Station, only a few miles from here, 2,000 people rallied where the old Pathmark was. We went out of business. I mean, that's more people than went to Pathmark in the whole year before that.
No, that really deserves some attention. Mm-hmm. We have local people here in the area that are resisting and that are they're making their voices heard, and it needs to happen. We need to have more of it. You need to be able to express yourself. We need to be able to point out the things that are unjust or that represent hate and that are not respecting other people's opinions and
we're just intimidating them.
Yeah, like making us feel as though we aren't the majority, or that we have to somehow will be answering for Trump, or that we have to somehow watch out because this is no. That is intimidation, and we're not going to just let you wield imagery and perspectives without listening to the perspectives that we have. And I think, you know, the campaign being over, it should be about unity and not pressuring people.
Well, except that it's not about unity for us, and we are going to be pressuring people. I see the point. It's dialogue. It's hashing out these issues and talking about various points without being intimidating, without being overbearing. Now, an example, I think, a good example.
Well, there's not enough.
Yeah, that's not enough. You're right. Now, a good example of this took place in I mentioned Port Jefferson Station where the rally took place. Well, in Port Jefferson Village down the hill. You know, we talked about this last year where a giant Trump sign appeared before the election. And another sign appeared in the last few days in the same place by an ice cream shop known as Roger's Frigate. It's right on the corner of Broadway and Route 25A, and it just said in red and blue letters on a white background, "In Trump we trust." And you know, It's one thing to spout an opinion. It's another thing to rub it in people's faces in ways that they are powerless to answer. And that's what really bothered me about this. And apparently it bothered a lot of people, too. Just seeing this massive sign there in the middle of the town. And the only reason it was there was because the person that owns that particular plot of land happens to be a far right-wing zealot. In fact, this is the guy that tore down a statue of Thomas Jefferson. Think about the symbolism of that. Tore down a statue of Thomas Jefferson, one of our founding fathers, in response to 9/11. Yeah, I mean, the analogy could not be clearer than what actually took place. So here we had this sign screaming that Trump is God, almost exactly, in Trump we trust, to anybody that went to the main part of the town. And, you know, if we stood there with a sign saying something else negative about Trump, we'd probably be arrested because we don't own the land and we can't put up a sign. So you're just basically, you're faced with this and it's intimidating and, quite frankly, it's offensive. And a number of people complained. Apparently the sign has now been taken down. And in fact, they've been fined for putting the sign up. Thank you, Port Jefferson. They've been fined for putting the sign up because it's considered a temporary sign and those are not allowed.
Yeah.
That's according to the Newsday story, which covered this. I wish I could read it, but they want money for me to read the rest of the story. Yeah, you know, it's one thing to express opinions. It's another thing to rub people's noses in it. And to have this overbearing, superior feeling, it's going to get a reaction.
When you know the proximity, you know it's front and center in town, and you are unapologetic, and you're not being sensitive to the widest, I think, populace, the widest, I guess, customer base for the town. You're I guess kind of isolating people in a lot of ways.
Alienating.
That's the word. Yeah.
Get used to that word.
Yeah, alienating people, and you know, they don't need to see that. So maybe they want to come down to Port, you know, enjoy it for what it is, and not think about politics.
We're not discouraging people from expressing opinions, but okay, if we put up a sign in that exact same spot that said "Dump Trump" or whatever phrase we decide, I could understand people being upset by that and wanting that sign removed. And it has nothing to do with our political opinions or their political opinions. It's just, okay, you know, now you've changed the discussion to basically force the issue and make people deal with your opinions when they just want to stroll in a town and not have to deal with that at that particular moment. Now, it may come to the point where it becomes such that these opinions are just everywhere through demonstrations, through picket signs, things like that. But in this particular case, these guys won. They're in power. What is the point of making people feel intimidated by equating Trump to God and forcing it down our throats?
To say nothing of the fact that temporary signs are a no-no.
Well, there's that, too.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Check
for
that first.
Village permits.
Yeah.
But, you know, the media, I mean, we saw the press conference with Sean Spicer. Wow, I love this guy. This guy, if he lasts a week, I'll be surprised, but he's going to blow a gasket. He's just, he's like one of those hard-ass lieutenants you see on NYPD Blue that, you know, is by the book and is always yelling at somebody, except he's yelling at the press. And the press doesn't like to be yelled at. They don't like to be lectured. And that's a good thing, folks. It's a good thing to have a free press. You might not always agree with what they say. And I know people were criticizing CNN for their inauguration coverage, saying, oh, boy, you guys are being just towing the line with Trump. You know what? They were doing a fair job. They were covering what was happening. And they did the same thing for the demonstration the next day. And they did the same thing the day after that when they were challenged on comparing the numbers, which clearly show that more people showed up for Obama's inauguration. A lot more people showed up there than for Trump's. Shouldn't be a big deal, but it's a huge deal for the current president. But the media is fighting back, and we should be supporting them for fighting back. New York Times today had a headline that basically said that that Trump is a liar. The headline read, "Trump repeats lie about popular vote in meeting with lawmakers." in the New York Times. They're not the only one. Lots of media outlets are saying this, basically calling Trump a liar because he is a liar. The facts clearly show that what he is saying is a lie. Not that he's mistaken. He is basically pushing forth false truths, or what they call alternate facts, alternative facts. It's Orwellian. It's really, really creepy and disgusting and scary, and we cannot let it go unchallenged. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, we have to call it out. It's blatantly just unethical from a journalistic perspective. What else do you say? Shameful.
It's your responsibility as a journalist. You have to stand up when somebody says something that's wrong, that's not true. You have to challenge them. You have to ask them questions. And this guy, Sean Spicer, does not like that at all. He will yell at you. He will kick you out of the room, say all kinds of things.
Yeah. And I guess I'll just add both a caution and something I'd encourage. It would be nice. On the surface to think of some kind of shield or way to protect journalists, but we have that already. And I would be very careful about the kind of talk around instituting anything new. The Free Flow of Information Act is something that was recently mentioned, but adding things, anything anew that would be under the guise of some sort of journalistic shield that really makes a lot more of journalists' content and materials something that could be actually subpoenaed instead. So that, I think, is going to become something people look at, but we should look at very skeptically, because there are so many protections as is. What we really need is good investigative work and people to stand behind that work.
People with conviction, people with courage. And that's why we need to stand up and support those people. I recommend a good article that appeared on New Republic today, newrepublic.com. It's called "Donald Trump is Becoming an Authoritarian Leader Before Our Very Eyes. The administration's many lies this weekend should frighten all Americans." Way too much for us to go into right now, but a lot of facts there, a lot of things to consider. And folks, it hasn't even been a week yet. It's not even been a week. And look at all that has happened so far. It's stunning. Did you think it was going to be like this?
No, not really. I
kind of was hoping it would be.
I knew that there would be some great, great issues that would get stirred up, because they would be trying to force things through quickly. Mm-hmm. And it would span a lot of different issues. So a lot of the public policy channels, of course, my favorite things to watch, hearings and Senate stuff. It's really, really cool to watch those committees, see the confirmation process. Even if it isn't going your way, it's good to be aware. And I think that's something we're better suited for now than ever. And I mean, I just have to say, this week I printed out more stories for this show than I have, I think, in 6 months, because we've just been talking about the election. And I don't doubt that we will be doing no less than that, and maybe more in weeks ahead.
We'll either need to talk faster or have more time or something.
Somehow, yeah.
But you know what? We're united. We're fired up. Thank you, Donald, for that, because I don't think we could have done it without you. It takes a lot to unite people sometimes.
You work for us now.
That's right. Hey, let's say goodbye to this room, because I've spent so many I've probably, if you add it up, it's probably multiple years straight that I've been in this room doing radio shows of one sort or another.
I've been here for a couple. I've been here with you. I helped a little, over a couple of those.
Absolutely. And you were a listener, too, before that?
I started out as a budding listener, full of ideas and inspired by the topics and conversation that came from this very room, this small little gem here.
When I think of all the talent that has been in this room in the course of the many years that this room has been here, it's something. I used to call it the most interesting room on the island, because the people that came in here knew so much. They would interview people, whether it's on the phone or live. It was just the source for all kinds of magical radio that inspired all sorts of people.
I remember the first time I was in here, you had me on. I was so nervous and just had no idea what to say and was uncomfortable.
Oh,
and
you were great.
For years after, very critical and uncomfortable with my ability to talk on air and then ran the board badly for many months. But here I am. I feel I've learned so much and been challenged by listeners and inspired by the ability to express myself. So this place will have been where all those memories reside, I think, in a lot of ways.
Well, we're going to take a slow and sentimental walk throughout the entire facility and take a last look at this place before we leave it. And next week at this time, we'll be coming to you from a brand new facility, a temporary facility within our brand new facility. But it's part of a massive project that all kinds of people here at the station are working on. So again, from the old studio, it's Emmanuel and Kyle saying goodnight for the last time. And next week, our voices will be all the better for coming from the new place.
Yep, indeed. We'll see you then.
And if only we could say the same about the country. I'm sure we'll be talking about all sorts of dire things that have happened in the week since. Stay tuned for Finn. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Bye.
My friends, this is Finn. I'm with you until the 9 p.m. hour. This is WUSB Stony Brook, our last night for this show in the new studios. So, stick with that and bask in the old warmth. That's right. Tonight, some crazy music, some music from Warren Zevon, Birthday Boy. Stay tuned. Yeah, so here we are in the old WUSB studios, basking in the old sound and the old stuff. And stay tuned, because we're going to be blasting out some stuff just for here. We'll be right back.
in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river I've been running ever since. Oh, it's been a long time coming, but I know change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die, 'cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. Oh, it's been a long time coming, but I know say, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me. Right down on my knees. I couldn't last for long, but now I think I'm able to carry on. Oh, it's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Yes, it will.